Now, I have a bit of a confession to make. I don't know if anyone can remember, if you were here about 2.5 years ago, I stood up here and proudly told you about one time when I just started driving, some evasive action that I took to avoid a car accident. Anyone remember that? 2.5 years ago? Some people remember. That's good. Now, I also said that in my 30 years as a driver, and I'm quoting myself here from what I said 2.5 years ago, I said, so far, in all that time, with many thousands of kilometres under my seatbelt, I've never, ever even had an accident. Yet. Notice, if you care to do so, the strategic inclusion. Back then, those words that I quoted, I did say yet, right? Well, sadly, I stand up here and I confess that those words are no longer true. Because last Tuesday afternoon, after I had stopped to buy some petrol and some milk at a petrol station in Bass Hill, I turned left back onto the Hume Highway and I was heading east in the inside lane. There was traffic stopped at the traffic lights that had banked back into the intersection that I was coming up to. And because of that traffic, when I came up to that intersection, I naturally stopped my car and I was waiting at the lights, even though they were actually green, because there were still cars ahead of me queuing across that intersection. Now, I reckon I waited there stationary probably for at least 5 seconds, maybe more. And then, just as I was about to press the accelerator to move forward to go across that intersection, all of a sudden, there was a massive bang from behind. The impact was so strong that I basically felt a bit like a rag doll going like this kind of thing. My head was forced back into the headrest and my phone on the dashboard, it flew and I found it later down on the floor of the car. Now, the noise was so loud that I actually thought at the time it was a multiple car collision. I got out of the car and I went back and, I realised it's only the car behind me that's been involved here. So I inspect the damage. Anyone notice it on the way in here? You might have seen my car at all. Well, the damage was substantial enough that the rear door at the back of my car there, it couldn't be opened. I had been hit by a black Honda CRV. Anyone here drive a car like that? Now, even though there was no visible damage to that car, my poor Nimbus, it definitely felt the impact. And surprisingly to me, I did too. Because around 3.5 hours after the crash, the lower side, left side of my back started to hurt. And I even felt a kind of pulsing pain. It was sore that night and most of the next day. And during this time, I found out that my neck as well, my neck also started to feel sore in certain positions. And even today, I think it's not totally right. And that's like 5 days after the crash. Still a little bit painful when I put my head, if I go like this, I think, or put it forward. Now, thankfully, I don't think that any long-term damage has been done, to me at least. But I have been surprised at the extent of my injuries from what was, on the face of things, just a relatively simple motor accident. But having been involved in such an accident, after so many years of driving, it has made me think about driving a motor vehicle and what our attitude should be as Christians as we engage in this activity. So, I think it's important to think about this question because perhaps the majority of us, as we grow up, we will end up getting a driver's license and start driving. Now, how many of us here already have a driver's license? Put your hands up if you've got a driver's license. That's probably the majority of us here, isn't it? Now, for those of you who don't yet have a license, how many of you plan one day to get one? Hands up. Yeah, I think most people are probably planning to one day be able to drive a car. So it looks like driving a car, it's an activity that the majority of us will engage in. And even if perhaps we're not planning on being a driver ourselves, I'm pretty sure that all of us will be passengers in a motor vehicle at some point in our lives. So the question is, how should Christians drive motor vehicles? What do you reckon? Is there anything in the Bible that talks about this issue? What do you think? Yes or no? Maybe, some people are saying. Well, there's nothing in the Bible that talks specifically about driving a car, right? Why do you think that is? Well, cars were only invented 134 years ago, really. So it's not surprising the Bible doesn't talk about motor vehicles as such. But just because the Bible doesn't have anything specific to say about a particular issue, that's not the same thing as saying that it's got nothing whatsoever to say about that issue. So, as we've done before, I want us once again to apply the gospel framework that we've talked about previously, framework of generation, degeneration, regeneration. We want to apply it to this issue and see what it says. Now, for those of you who haven't seen this framework before, we've got God as a generator. He's the creator of the universe. He's created the world. That's generation. But then things go wrong when sin comes into the world. That's the red box there with degeneration. But then with Jesus coming along, we've got God working in the world to restore things. So that's regeneration. In a nutshell, if you want to know what Christians believe, that's it there on the screen there for you. God the creator, creating a world. Things go wrong through human sin and rebellion against God, but then through Jesus, we get people coming back into submission to God. So following that framework, we want to think about this issue today. So turning to generation, remember this has to do with how things were back in the beginning when God first created the world. In particular, the question is here, what was the place of driving back in the Garden of Eden? Anything there? Any motor vehicles back then? No, no such thing as motor vehicles. We know that Adam, he didn't own a Mercedes-Benz because they didn't exist back then. He didn't have a driver's license. But back then, we do need to ask the question about animal transport because we do know animals existed back then. Is there any indication from the Bible that Adam rode a horse occasionally or perhaps a camel? Maybe even an elephant or two? What do you think? No? Nothing? No evidence? Yeah, there's no evidence. That's not to say he didn't, but we know. We can't really argue from silence that he did engage in those activities. So do you think the issue of transportation then is irrelevant when it comes to back then in the Garden of Eden? What do you think? Nothing? Well, what about self-transportation? Do you think Adam and Eve engaged in self-transportation? Like, did they do anything to move themselves about? Walking, perhaps? Maybe even running? Crawling? Maybe even a bit of swimming? What do you think? I think they would have had to have moved. At least on one occasion. And perhaps I think, pretty much like us, we're moving all the time, right? We always engage in self-transportation. Most of the time, probably, I assume, they're walking. Now, let's think about this. For starters, back then, there was only Adam and Eve, the Bible tells us. There were various animals there in the garden. We also know that occasionally God, he appeared to move around in the garden to visit Adam and Eve. Now, given that each person, an animal, occupies its own space, and given that those creatures and God himself, when he appears to move around, what do you think that means? There are going to have to be some rules, right, that relate to how individuals transport themselves. For example, if Eve was standing in the way, would it be right for Adam to knock her out of the way, or maybe just to go running over the top of her? What do you think? When Adam and Eve had babies, would it be right for either of them to tread on top of their baby? I don't think so. Having a defined space, ethical considerations come into every single movement that we make. Blocking someone's path or physically restraining a person without reason, punching or kicking someone without justification, all of those things aren't legitimate ways of conducting ourselves. In other words, simply by virtue of being created by God as human beings in His image, and that involves us with physicality, we occupy a certain space within the universe. Animals do too. Okay, animals aren't created in the image of God, but they're created in their particular image. They've got their own special dimensions. All of this means that spatial integrity for humans and animals is important. After all, God's created us and animals too to occupy a certain space. So respecting the physical integrity of other humans is very important to God, because not to do that results in injury and death. Now, the first instance in human history that we know from the Bible where a person's physical integrity was harmed, anyone think what that was? What's the first occasion in the Bible when we see someone being harmed physically? Susan, what did Susan say? Cain and Abel. Yeah. Cain and Abel. Cain killed his brother. The Bible tells us that Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. Now, did he use his physical body to do that? Or did he use a weapon as an extension of his physical body? It doesn't really matter how he killed his brother. But Cain committed a serious sin in not preserving the physical integrity of his brother. All of this has implications for how we drive motor vehicles today. Motor vehicles that weigh thousands of kilograms and which can maim and kill when not properly controlled. Now, Cain's murder of Abel is presented in the Bible as one of the consequences of human sinfulness. And sadly, on the level of degeneration, ever since the murder of Abel, basically what we've seen is that human history, it's replete with all kinds of instances in which the integrity of the human body has been disturbed. Okay, this can present itself in murder, in assaults. Sadly, also, we see it big time in warfare. It also presents itself in contact injuries and traffic accidents. Now, I remember a long time ago when I was a little kid at preschool. As kids do, I was running around in the playground. The only problem was there was a little girl doing the same. Plus, we were running in the opposite direction, but towards each other. And we weren't particularly paying much attention to what was in front of us until, bang, we hit our heads and both of us had to go home early with a large egg-shaped swelling on our forehead. Now, that taught me from an early age that two people physically can't occupy the same space. That's just a fact how God has made us. Our bodies are physical entities that have been designed to occupy an exclusive space. That's basically just a physical truth. But sadly, it's a physical truth that is evident whenever motor vehicles crash into each other. And when it comes to motor vehicle accidents, the carnage is rather incredible. Now, if you count pedestrians, the annual death toll from motor vehicle accidents around the world, it actually comes in at over 1.25 million victims every year. Just think about that. Over 1 million people each year on this globe dying because of car accidents. That's basically one person killed every 25 seconds. That is simply horrific. Not to mention the millions upon millions of non-fatal injuries suffered annually as a result of traffic accidents. Now, in case you're walking on the road or driving somewhere, particular places to be careful in are, in Asia, Thailand is the bad place. And also, most of the countries in Middle East and Africa, be careful if you're anywhere near a road. But traffic accidents are just one outcome of life in a sinful world. The fact of the matter is that degeneration leads to a loss of physical integrity for human beings. You could say that living in this world, we know that one day our physical bodies, they're going to be affected somehow. The effects of sin are going to impact upon us. And in fact, we would say from a Christian perspective that this assault on human physical integrity, it actually reached its climax when Jesus was beaten, whipped, and then nailed to a rough wooden cross. His physical integrity was harmed. His body was pierced for our transgressions. But what was the solution for Jesus in regards to his loss of physical integrity? What would we say from the biblical perspective, do you think? What undid the effects of Jesus's being tortured and then dying? Yeah? I think we probably know the answer, yeah? From a Christian perspective, we would say the solution to every human's loss of physical integrity, ultimately, it lies in regeneration. It has to do with resurrection. But with resurrection, okay, that deals in large part with undoing the physical effects of sin. But with resurrection, there also comes in God's plan a spiritual transformation as well. And this spiritual transformation, it takes place as people come into submission to God through faith in Jesus. And as that happens, that results in us being renewed in our minds to start seeing things God's way, to start to be able to live in a way that is pleasing to God, to value the things that God values, and to conduct ourselves in a way that promotes life and peace. And friends, that includes respecting the physical integrity of others. So, applying these principles, what does that mean then, do you think, in terms of how we should drive our motor vehicles? Well, I think applying these principles, driving carefully, should be important for us as Christians. Don't do anything behind the wheel which would endanger the lives or the bodies of yourself and other people. Now, we can see from what the Apostle Paul taught in our passage which was read out to us, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 31. Paul talked about glorifying God in everything that we do. And that includes the manner by which we transport ourselves, the manner in which we control our bodies. Paul says that we're not to unnecessarily give offence to other people or to seek out our own advantage over that of others. In Titus chapter 3, verse 2, Paul also teaches that Christians should be fair and show gentleness to all people. Now, applying these things to how we drive our cars, the question here is, what Paul said there about how Christians should behave, is that the way you drive your car on the road? Fairly? Gently? Considerately? Or are you a bit of a rev head who feels he has to compete with other drivers as if you were some kind of race car driver? Now think about it. If you drive carefully, safely, unselfishly, gently, what are you going to be doing? Well, think about the proper use of signals, such as your blinkers. Think about how closely you drive to other cars. Think about whether you're willing to give way to other cars where appropriate to do so. Also, not seeking to exact revenge on others when they cut you off or drive inappropriately. These are all things that may help us to be gentle and considerate behind the wheel. Now, all in all, when driving a car, like in every single thing else that we do as Christians, God actually wants us to model the gospel in how we conduct ourselves. Now, justice is important to God, but so is patience, compassion, considerateness, and gentleness. Now, I think this probably has implications for me the next time I find myself behind an L plate driver in front of me. That can be frustrating. I have to be patient. Realize it is learning to drive. Sure, next opportunity I might turn off left to avoid them, but anyway, the next time you get behind the wheel, make sure you don't drive like a demon. Instead, think about how you can share the gospel in the way that you drive.